coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. Carl and Jason go a little deeper as they do a character analysis of Princess Leia, from her loyalty to the Rebel Alliance to her relationship with Han and her Jedi potential. We explore it all. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 124, Your Worshipfulness. I am, as always, one of your co-hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Wedge Antilles to my Wes Jansen. We have Carl LeClaire.
That got him. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Carl.
Oh, man. We're going to talk about a woman tonight. It's going to be great.
We are.
I was talking to Joe Hogan earlier today, and he's like, what are you guys recording about tonight? And I was like, Leia. And he goes, cool, do you have a lot to say? I was like, I don't really know, because I don't get women. He's like, oh, you're real funny.
Well, I was making my notes, and I was like, wow, there's a lot more to say here than I thought I had.
Yeah, so, same here. Like, I wasn't expecting a whole lot. And then as I got going, I was like, ooh. Because I don't take a lot of notes anymore. I think I've gotten more concise. But I didn't take a ton, but I took more than I have taken in a while. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. So, But yeah. We haven't done a... You brought this up. You know, we haven't done a character episode in a long time. And we've kind of done all the main characters except Leia. So, and Padme.
So
we haven't done any female characters. So it's like, yeah, why don't we do Leia? And we went with it.
But first, before we jump into the topic, we had an awesome poll for you Larians from our last episode. So let's jump right into that. And what was our poll?
Oh, it was a good one. People's favorite lightsaber duel from the animated series, be it Clone Wars, the Tarnikovsky series, or Rebels.
Yes. And so we got some good responses here. In a tie for fourth place, we had Darth Maul and versus Pre Vizsla, and Dooku versus the Night Sisters, each with two votes. My vote went with Dooku versus the Night Sisters, obviously, because I think Dooku is awesome, and he fought against three saber-wielding opponents while half-blind. So that's pretty impressive, and he handled them rather well.
Wait, did you say that was yours?
That was mine, yes.
Oh, cool. So, that is a good one. I forgot about that one.
It is. There's so many good lightsaber duels in the Clone Wars, yeah. and some of the other ones that are on the list here, as we will see.
Yeah. P.S. Side note, I love getting on tangents right away.
Of course.
That was such a good episode, too, because it was cool seeing, like, they did a good job of this a few times, like, Dooku kind of getting, like, beat up a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Not a ton, but I like the fact that he was a beatable opponent, in a sense, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
He's not like this unstoppable force, but he was crafty enough and wily enough to work his way out of trouble at the end of it. Of course, and then at the end of the duel, he just like, you know, electrocutes all three of them and throws them out the window. That was kind of awesome.
Right.
He's like, enough of this. You know,
that's not how he would have said it, Jason.
Enough of this. There we go.
All right. Sorry. That is a cool duel.
And in third place with three votes was the Anakin Skywalker versus Asajj Ventress duel from the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series, the one that was on Yavin 4 and ended up in the rain and stuff, which was an epic, awesome duel.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the highlight one of the highlights of the micro series was that duel, because it like spanned like three episodes. It was pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So, in second place with 6 votes, we have the Kanan versus the Inquisitor duel from the season finale of Star Wars Rebels, which is where your vote went, Carl. And why did you vote?
You said this was second place, right?
Yes, second place.
Yeah, and I know what the first place one will be, and that was a close second for me because that was always my favorite. But here's why I prefer the Kanan Inquisitor duel to what is soon to be our number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just awesome. I mean, it's so like the setting is epic. It's not like over the top. It's a little bit more slow paced, so you can follow it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. It's really cool too because we see how in a very short period Kanan has really progressed as a duelist. Mm-hmm. Right, like the first time he goes against the Inquisitor, he basically gets his butt kicked. I mean, this is very, you know, Luke from Empire to Jedi. You know, Kanan becomes like a totally different fighter. You know, what we can assume is probably a few months later. And so I love that. I love the scenery. I mean, I love that. It looks a lot like the reactor shaft stuff in Theed, you know, where the coolest duel of Star Wars happens, in my opinion. You know, so it's such a cool like set piece for it. The music was really cool, and the dialogue too. That was something that's, you know, so good in a lightsaber duel. And the Clone Wars does a great job with these as well, but kind of just the taunting and the dialogue. I mean, I'm just so riveted, and I really love these characters. I think that's what did it for me more than what's about to be in first place is, while mm-hmm. it's a super cool duel, I'm more invested in Kanan as a character than any of the other characters that are going to be in the duel that we're about to talk about.
Right.
Which is what, Jason?
Well, in first place with 7 votes, so only beating the Kanan Inquisitor duel by 1 vote.
That's pretty awesome.
In our informal poll here, is the Sidious versus Darth Maul and Savage Opress duel from season 5 of the Clone Wars, the episode Lawless, which is an epic, epic, epic duel.
Doesn't that title, though, for the episode Lawless just make you feel like it should be a Walker episode? Like, just like Chuck Norris, Texas like, Rangers. Strolls in with really tight jeans on and just, like, roundhouse kicks all three of them.
Yes. There can only be 2, and you are no longer my... Wait, who are you? Whoosh!
Oh, man.
Yes, but that's our favorite animated lightsaber duel poll for you. I had a lot of fun with it. Stick around and stay tuned to the end of the episode for our new matchup. But obviously, we have a main topic to get to first.
Mm-hmm. So. You're darn right we do. You're darn tootin', as they say in the South.
You're darn Skippy. Darn Skippy. I don't know.
All right.
There's so many like weird colloquialisms that happen. Okay. The South has the best, though.
They do. They're right quick about it, too.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Chris Hoffa's Planet Smith. How he tickles me. Okay, anyway, we're going to talk about Leia now. So I don't know about you, Jason. I pretty much stuck to the movies and her progression in the movies. And you know, when we were talking about this the other day, I was like, we can do an episode on her, but I don't feel like there's a whole lot of development to her. And then as I started kind of doing my notes, it's like, yeah, there actually is a good amount of development to her, actually quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I think there is a lot of her character that's already been developed off camera, right? Like,
yeah.
she is at a particular place when we first meet her that is that says a lot about her already. In a more complicated way, like same with Luke. I mean, Luke's had a lot of development off screen, but it's a very simplistic development, right? Like he's a farm boy and he's disgruntled with his life. I mean, you pick that up very quickly of, you know, meeting him. But I was going into Tosh Station, pick up some power converters.
You're going to waste time with your friends when your chores are done.
You should do Uncle Owen as the burglar guy, or not the burglar guy, the muffin man. Oh, hell, they're going, dur, 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 that guy.
Oh, the Swedish chef.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. You can be tame with the friends after you choose them to hear the scary, to hear the first. There we go. It's been a while since I've done.
I know. Yeah. Okay.
There we go.
Uncle Owen and this R2 has a bad motivator. Look. Okay, sorry. But anyway, yeah, so that's Luke.
Yes.
But, yeah, no.
It's a good thing you brought that up, because I was going to bring it up, too, because she has had so much already established for her before we even meet her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's the same age as Luke,
mm-hmm.
but she is a very, very, very strong individual, obviously. She's caring because she's, you know, part of the Rebels, and she does,
and her name is Carrie.
Her name is Carrie. She also does these relief missions a lot, because that's what she disguises this trip as. This she's very politically savvy, because she's already an Imperial senator at age 18 or 19. She's a leader, obviously, in the Rebel Alliance, and she's very fearless when it comes to dealing with the likes of Darth Vader. So it's really, really very interesting to see someone like that who's already had that much character development before we even meet them.
Yeah. So I know you're not reading the new Marvel run comics, but
no, not at the moment. I'll probably check out some of the trade paperbacks when they come out.
The Kanan one comes out tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna get the first Kanan at Celebration. That's okay. The plan.
So Kanan comes out tomorrow. Then we have the next Leia one the following Wednesday, and then the following Wednesday is the next Vader one, and then the following Wednesday is the next Star Wars one.
Ah.
It's pretty awesome. I just wish except for Kanan. They take place like in between 4 and 5. And same with the mm-hmm. novels. I'm kind of getting sick of that. Like, can we get another time period, please?
One of the new novels coming out.
Well, the Dark Lords of the Sith. The Dark Lords of the Sith that comes out at the end of April I think 5 years after Revenge of the Sith.
And I think there's a Leia novel that's coming out after that. That's between episodes 5 and 6.
Oh, so, good.
I think they're going to start spreading it out because they have to fill that whole gap between 6 and 7.
Right. Right.
So,
but I will say the recent Leia comic, I just read it last night. Finally, mm-hmm. I'm like over a week late, but we get some backstory to her from before A New Hope. And it was really cool. Like, we get to see her interact with Bail Organa. We see her mm-hmm. on Alderaan. She has an image of Padme. It's really cool.
You'd yes! like it. It was that cool. was like one of my theories.
Because
she
goes to Naboo in the comic. So,
oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool.
It is really kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, that was one of my theories, is that Bail Organa has to have told her that she's adopted, or she's figured it out.
Right,
you know, because she's an incredibly smart person.
Yeah, but what's really cool in the comic, which you don't necessarily see blatantly in the first film, so, okay, a little bit of a spoiler alert here, but it's not that big. Like, we see a scene with her. She's got somebody training her how to fight, like, hand-to-hand combat, basically. Mm-hmm. It was with, like, a staff-type weapon, and yeah. Bail is, like, really ticked off with her. He's like, you know, you're supposed to be at school right now studying. And she kind of goes on this little rant about how she doesn't want to just be some like politician who's all about words. She wants to be out there doing something. She wants to be active. So mm-hmm. like, there's this younger Leia really has this desire for action, which we see, even though, right, because like it's clear from the lore that Alderaan is a planet of peace. Like, they're a culture of peace.
Right.
But Leia's a bit feisty. So, and we see that, like, you know, again, in like her very early on in A New Hope. I mean, when she stands up to Vader like that.
Yeah. But she shoots the stormtrooper.
And she shoots the stormtrooper. Yeah. But what's really interesting, though, what we find out about her very quickly is she is a senator, though, right? She's in the Imperial mm-hmm. Senate, which right off the bat, like, she's really young, yet she's already this, like, senator. And my read on that is actually, it's kind of cool, because I think Leia is still trying to affect change in the political system that they have while secretly undermining it.
Right.
So, like, she's a bit duplicitous, but she's very intelligent about it, right? Like, she's still, you know, Vader's like, you know, where are these plans, blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm on a diplomatic mission doing my thing.
Right.
And she's like, the Imperial Senate will not sit still for this. When they hear you've been attacked a diplomatic ship on a... yeah.
You weren't on any relief missions. Several Rebel transmissions were beamed to this ship, and I want, you know.
Yeah, dude,
I don't remember.
By the way, your
exactly.
Darth Vader impression is. I've been listening to the radio dramas. I cannot uh-huh. stand Darth Vader in them.
In the radio dramas?
Yeah, oh my God. That's the, oh, and that's Yoda. Yoda thing, sucks, too.
And who?
Yoda. I can't stand the Yoda character either.
Yoda's kind of weird too. But yeah. That's Vader's the one thing about the radio dramas. I'm just like,
I mean, you get used to it. It'd
be perfect if it wasn't for that.
Right. Right. So anyway.
Anyways.
Sidetrack over. But yeah. So even right off the bat, right, we do get this impression that Leia is, while very young, she's very intelligent. She's very bold. And she's very, you know, she really stands for something. And even think of the uniform she's in the entire movie, right? I mean, she is this pure character. She kind of represents purity and goodness. I mean, that very first scene, you got her standing in front of Vader, who towers over her in black, and she's this diminutive person all in white. You know, it's very clear who the good and bad guys are.
Right. She must not have had much of a childhood.
No, probably like Michael Jackson. She was probably beat a lot by her father. Just kidding. That's not true.
Wow.
Poor Michael.
But yeah, no, it's she grew up very, very fast due to who her father was, or her stepfather, I should say. Mm-hmm. And probably also due to who her father was. you know, but she, I would not be surprised if she had a hand in speeding up her adulthood process, you know, in taking on responsibility and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Speeding that up for herself. She's just that kind of very driven person. And that's who we get in this, in A New Hope. She's a very driven, very loyal person to the rebellion.
Yes.
Because she will not give it up at all.
Right.
And moving ahead a little bit, she beat the mind probe.
Yeah.
She beat the mind probe that they used on her to try and find out answers and stuff. And I'm wondering, and this was me making connections, if maybe she was using some sort of, you know, subconsciously using the Force to help her with that.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the things that I was like, wow, she's a really, really smart and very, very loyal person, because they know she's part of the rebellion, but they can't prove it.
Right.
They can't prove it at all. And obviously, even when they're threatening Alderaan, she gives them an old base, an old disused rebel base that the rebellion is no longer at.
Right. Yeah, no, I was going to comment on that fact too, right? Like she resists Vader too. And it's not just it's the mind probe and Darth Vader. You know, this is a very imposing scene. And actually, that scene in the movie is really well shot. Like when, you know, right before the door closes and the probe's going towards her, Vader's walking towards her, and she's just like all scrunched up on that little like bed, if you want, whatever that is, you know, and she's like tiny in the corner while she's about to be assaulted, which is very scary. So the fact that she resists all of that, again, it shows that she is not under any circumstance going to sell out the rebellion.
Right.
You know, so.
Wow. She's quite a remarkable person already, you know. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, she is somebody of strong conviction. That's really it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then she has to watch Alderaan get destroyed, you know.
Which that was,
you know, that's the one thing, like, which if you really think about it, it's like devastating. It it never really affects me. I don't, which sounds awful, but I'm sure that's true of a lot of fans. Like it's really bad that happens, and it is. It, you know, she's trying desperately to save her planet here. Like she is basically powerless, but you know, she I think she does have like at least a tiny bit of hope that if she gives up something, maybe Tarkin won't do it.
Right.
And I also think that she doesn't think he really would. Like, okay, Alderaan is way too important of a planet. There's no way he's going to really do this. So I'll give him something at least. And you know, like when, you know, Dantooine is far too remote to make an effective demonstration, but we will deal with your rebel friends soon enough.
No.
Yeah.
You know,
you may fire when ready. What?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. I mean, that exclamation is like, I think she's legit. Like, wait, are you serious? You're really going to do this?
Right.
And
wipe out an entire planet, billions of people.
Right. Yeah. This is what I think is extremely, like, but as far as what that says about her character in light of that, we never see her get emotional about it. You know, I mean, yeah, she's kind of shocked there and, you know, she's obviously sad. Like, we can assume as a human being she's sad, but mm-hmm. she never lets that out. Like, I think it steps up her conviction to defeating the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very cold character to a certain degree. Yeah. You know, that's how I would interpret, like, you know, when they show up at Yavin at the end, like, you know, after they escape the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I have nothing to say about her on the Death Star because there's literally no character development.
She takes the blaster and, you know, does some damage and right. they all escape.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, she obviously shows she knows her way around a fight.
Right.
You know, as soon as they get into, you know, the base on Yavin 4, you know, General Nana comes up to her and says, you know, we're so sorry to hear of the loss. She's like, we have no time for our sorrows now, you know? And it's just like, I think though, the reason it's not so much that there is a coldness in that in the sense of she's not letting herself feel it. But I think also because she holds herself as a symbol of the rebellion for the rebellion. And I think her fear is if she breaks and shows like all this emotion and starts crying and weeping in the hallways, that she will bring the morale down. And she sees herself as an example of leadership to the rebellion, and she's showing them with this kind of like stone front face that's like, no matter what the Empire does to us, we will defeat them. We will not let this break us down.
And of course, they've got the Death Star right on their heels, so they've got to deal with that right now, and they don't have time to to, you know, grieve for Alderaan. I'm sure she does privately. I would hope so. I would really hope so, because otherwise it's not a healthy thing to keep bottled up.
No, exactly. Exactly.
So I hope she takes time to grieve privately afterwards.
Yeah. Well, in the first comic, the first Leia comic, it literally starts up right while they're in the temple throne room, right as that ceremony ends.
Mm.
And she wants to immediately like get involved with the military aspect. And General Donna kind of says, no, like you really need to go grieve. Like you need to go like let this sink in what's just happened. Like let us deal with this. You kind of like he kind of tries to like shun her away. And she's pissed. And like she does. She goes off about like how, you know, like, oh, if you think it would be better that if you think I'm gonna be better service to the rebellion walking through the halls crying, you would be wrong. So, and like basically her mission then, and this is what I think the current arc of the comics is doing, is she kind of escapes, even though General Dodonna doesn't want her to go, with another Alderaanian who's in the military, to try to rescue and save remaining Alderaanians who are now refugees.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to like do this in honor of her father. So in the comics, she is kind of fleshing out and feeling some of that emotion. But again, Leia is very practical. Rather than mm-hmm. like just sitting and weeping about it, she takes action. That's her way of responding, I think, to these feelings is
right.
Like even in the comic, it's not like I'm not going to just sit here weeping. I'm going to go out there and try to rescue other Alderaanians and set up like a refugee and a new homeworld for them. And, you know, even in, you know, when we begin Empire Strikes Back, I mean, it's clearly her response to sadness is to just throw herself more and more into what she's doing, which is good and bad. Good because she's obviously affecting change and stuff, but at the same time, it's bad because she's not really letting herself feel things and work through them.
Right. But, and of course, at the end of A New Hope, she's obviously just completely come out to everybody as, you know, I am part of the Rebel Alliance. Mm-hmm. So her entire Imperial diplomat cover is completely shot. Of course, it doesn't really matter anymore because, you know, the Imperial Senate would no longer be of any concern to us. You know, the Emperor has shut it down. So
how will the Emperor maintain something without the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
But what of the rebels? If they have obtained a full technical readout of this battle station, it's possible, however unlikely, they might find a weakness and exploit it.
And the rebel plans you refer to will soon be back in our hands.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Yes. But yeah, so she can no longer, like, go out in public anymore.
Exactly. She is now an enemy of the state.
Right. But of course, you know, we move into Empire Strikes Back, and she is really, really struggling with this thing of maintaining this leadership post in the Rebel Alliance and not get involved with a personal relationship. Han's already under her skin, obviously, based on the way that they interact. You know, he's, you know, she has feelings for him, and she hates the fact that she has feelings for him. But she doesn't have time for that. She has to help the rebellion and lead the rebellion and be this figurehead and get involved with the tactical stuff. And, you know, by her sheer force of will, get this rebellion through the trials that they're going through, you know. And that's where she is at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, and does not have time for Han and his jokes and his crap, because that's not what I need to be doing right now, you know, is her whole mentality going into this.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think it's interesting that, you know, in A New Hope, it's never clear if she's part of the military branch of the rebellion. Like, she's clearly involved in the rebellion, mm-hmm. but her involvement is unclear. I mean, yeah, she's in the war room at the end, but she's not necessarily calling the shots in any capacity.
Right.
But, you know, when Empire starts and we first see her, she's literally in a military outfit.
Right.
You know, she is now clearly part of the military. And we'll even see her giving orders a little bit later, right? She's the one who's debriefing the pilots on the escape plan.
Yeah.
But I wanted to hit that conversation she has with Han in the hallway, right? I mean, it's clear that there is a romantic tension between them. And mm-hmm. it's funny because Han's not afraid to kind of call her on that.
Right.
And so, like I said, I've been re-listening to the radio dramas, and I've just actually finished listening to Empire today. But in this particular scene in the Empire Strikes Back radio drama, you know, Han keeps referring to her as the Ice Queen and like talking about how she needs to thaw out a little bit, because she does. Right. And like the thing is like she clearly feels something for Han, and Han is perceptive of that. Like you mm-hmm. can tell when somebody's attracted to you. Usually, like sometimes we can be wrong, but a lot of times you can be, you know, you kind of know what you're talking about. And Han is aware that she feels something for him. And he's like, what does he say? You know, what about what you feel? What I feel? Come on, you want me to stay because of the way you feel about me? You know, but she immediately yeah. redirects it to like, no, you're a good leader. You're of great help to us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for her, it's like her relationship with Han is simply for the rebellion, right? Like,
right.
Han, I care about you because you can help the rebellion. You're a good leader. It comes naturally to you. But right. he's like, no, that's not it. And she just refuses to let that out at this
Come
point.
Come on. Come on. You're yeah. imagining things.
Am I? Then why, then why are you following me? Afraid I'd leave without giving you a goodbye kiss?
I just assume kiss a Wookiee.
I can arrange that. You can use a good kiss. but yeah, I mean, so again, like it's very clear. All of her attention, all of her focus is to the rebellion. So, and this is something I'm going to mention a little bit later, so I'll bring it up now. At this point, still, Leia, while she certainly cares about people and she very much cares about the rebellion, mm-hmm. her devotion still is to a cause. Her devotion is to a movement. It's right. not necessarily to people.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of funny. If you think about some politicians, some politicians can be very awkward socially. It's almost as if they don't get how real people work. They get right. how ideas work. They get how to broadcast ideas, but they don't really get people, you know? And I think that's kind of true about Leia, is she's kind of oblivious to real human emotion. And that's what Han's kind of calling her on at the beginning yeah. there.
I don't know if oblivious, but she's
not oblivious. She just
decided
doesn't have time
like
for
she
it.
Doesn't have time for
she,
this.
Exactly.
This
is, she's turned that off.
Right. She's like,
so she's denying herself that.
This is not what needs what I'm needed to do right now. And so she's completely devoted to her cause and the greater cause of the rebellion. And she's completely denying herself any sort of like actual human interaction, you know, because she's a symbol.
Right.
She doesn't have time for that. She
exactly.
can't afford that. You know, that's the thing. But then of course she gets completely separated from the greater alliance
yeah.
and gets stuck with Han for days and days on end. So, and obviously a lot of the rest of the scenes, before we get to Cloud City, is just more outworking of her slowly kind of opening up, but not really to the idea of having a romantic relationship. Because, you know, she wants to get back to the fleet, you know, and they can't. She's stuck, you know, with this guy. So that's sort of her idea. It's, at least to me, it seems, through most of the middle portion of Empire.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think I like the way you put it. You know, she does. This is the first time she's really separated from the Rebel Alliance and that immediate fight. Like, really, right now, she's just caught up in a fight for her own survival, just as Han and Chewie are as well. But I think when they, you know, they find rest, at least for a brief time, in the belly of a space slug. Granted, they don't know it's a space slug.
Right.
But I think just even with that brief respite, or however you say that word?
Respite.
Respite, thank you. It's not a recipe, Carl. Respite.
Depends on where you're from.
New, from Nabisco, respites. Anyway, but yeah, in this like kind of little brief period of rest, and she's away from the movement, there's nothing she can really do about it. I think this also allows some of her feelings to come out. However, Han is the one who has to make the first move, right? Like, she would have never come on to Han. She would have never made that first move. And, you know, in a very, like, if you only ever saw that scene of Star Wars and you never knew anything else about Star Wars, Han could be a little bit creepy in the way he does that, right?
Pushy.
But at the same time, like, Leia is a strong character. If we know Leia, like, if she didn't want that, she would have punched Han or, like, pushed him away, right? Like, she does kind
of... He'd have gotten a groin shot.
Exactly. But she does kind of let it happen. And I think it's important to show, like, I think, you know, this is a very well-acted kiss in the sense that it is very passionate. Like, Leia gives herself to it as well, you know, and what startles her is 3PO. And, like, that startles the moment. And again, it's almost like she's like, oh, shoot, I've got to shut down. I can't, you know, I can't be open to this.
Right, right. She shuts it all off again.
Yeah.
And
Han, I've isolated the reverse power flux coupling. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're perfectly welcome. And the moment's over. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's not coming back.
Exactly.
So.
But yeah, but it is, you know, she clearly feels something for Han because she allows that kiss to happen. She gives herself to the kiss. But she needed him to make the first move because that just wasn't going to happen on her end.
Right.
So.
Right, but then of course Cloud City comes around.
I have
and
one
now
more thing before Cloud City.
Oh, you got something else.
I actually really like this little moment between Han and Leia. So after they're about to release the manual, like the landing claw from the Star Destroyer, Chewie's like off screen. She's already shut off 3PO, and they're looking for a place to go. Han kind of explains his plan to her. This is the first time Leia ever kind of praises Han, right? She's always given him hell in A New Hope. You know, you know, this bucket of bolts will never get us past that blockade. You know, she's always hating on Han and the Falcon. But, you know, he's got this idea of like, hey, we're going to float away with the garbage.
Yeah, watch this. Watch what? Yeah. Right?
I think we're in trouble. So, you know, but... there's this, she kind of says to him, she says, you know, you have your moments, not many of them, but you do have them. And she leans over and gives him this kiss on the cheek. And it's this very intimate little endearing kiss on the cheek. It's not like a friendly kiss. It's a kiss that somebody who gives their lover. And I think that's a really important exchange because that says a lot about Leia. Like, she leans over and gives him this little peck on the cheek. And I really like that moment because I think that's the first moment where it's clear that Leia really does care for him. Because that is. It's a very intimate little endearing moment.
That's the first time she initiates.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's a very much of a girlfriend move. So, you know, and it is funny because the moment before that, really all we see is them in the Minot cave and, you know, Han yells at her and calls her a committee.
I am not a committee!
Yeah.
I know.
But, you know, clearly something has happened off screen again between that kiss and this second kiss of Leia's, because she's very comfortable with him. And I think that's the thing, right? Like, I think Han has started to humanize Leia a bit. He's brought her into, he's allowed her to become, emotional. And that's right. Not for all of you who think that I'm a sexist right there just saying that because he's a man. It's not that. It's just, I mean, I think now that she's finally like kind of allowed herself to feel that, like Han did kind of initiate that for her, right? Mm-hmm. Like she did feel something for him and he allows her, he gives her the space to open up.
Yeah. He gives her the opportunity to give herself permission to experience these feelings.
Exactly. So I like that little exchange between the two of them. Well, they're kind of like hunkered over the little screen and looking for a place.
They're
working together there too, right? Like mm-hmm. they're in unison for the first time ever. They're not arguing. They're working this out together. And she
would it be awesome to have another scene like that in the Falcon in episode 7.
Uh huh.
Yes. Between a married Han and Leia.
Uh huh. Yep. Sure would. But so anyway, but we're off to Cloud City.
Yes. We're off to Cloud City. This is, you know, this should be something where it's restful and they can, you know, get everything back together before, you know, heading out to go meet back up with the Rebel fleet. And of course it turns out to be anything but that. And I think she's a little bit wary. Obviously she's wary of Lando, and she's a little bit irritated with Han because he seems to just be like, you know, okay, Lando, do whatever, you know. And you know, we have that scene where right before Lando comes to take them to dinner, she's, you know, I don't trust Lando, you know. She's very wary still, you know, even though this isn't an area that the Empire is supposed to be at.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to make sure that, you know, they get back to the Alliance and that they're, you know, that's still safe. You know, that whole connection there is still safe. Now that they're back out in public, she's very cautious.
Right. And I can't help but wonder if there might be, although I think it's probably a little bit of two elements. I think the main element of her wariness of Lando is just, she just doesn't trust him. There's something kind of skeezy about him, I think, mm-hmm. in her opinion. And also remember, they get shot at on their way in. And then Lando pretends to take a swing at Han because he's supposedly still upset with him, according to Chewie. You know, so she's wary right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also wonder if maybe there is a little bit of force intuition here. You know, I mean, think of Anakin in episode 1 when, you know, Qui-Gon points mm-hmm. out to him, like, you know, you can see things before you happen. Like, it's a Jedi trait. Like, this intuition you have is more than mm-hmm. just good guesses. Like, I wonder if to a certain degree Leia has that, you know?
That's a good point, because she's, you know, at the beginning of that scene, she's pacing and she's frustrated because 3PO is missing. And as she says, he's been gone far too long for him to have just gotten lost. You know, mm-hmm. something is going on, you know, and whether that's just her experience in dealing with the, you know, being on the run from the Empire or Force intuition, you know, something is going on and she doesn't like it and she's very wary and really on edge.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So
yeah.
And then of course there's the dinner. Welcome to dinner.
Yeah.
Hosted by Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Very, very great entertainment in that dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. With entertainment by Boba Fett. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. But what was I going to say? But yeah, like after, you know, Han is tortured, coolest scene in Star Wars. Oh my God, I'm not a real human being. But she is, right? She's so tender towards Han though, right? Like, why are they mm-hmm. doing this? She's like stroking his hair, like she is his girlfriend now. you're my girlfriend now. But, you know, I mean, yeah, right. So that shows, and she despises Lando, absolutely hates him. Like when she speaks to him, like there's like, she speaks to him with such venom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, she just, because Leia has finally allowed herself to start falling in love with somebody. And now here is this, you know, guy who was supposed to protect them, who was supposed to be honest to them. And he just stabbed them in the back.
Right.
And Leia just hates him for it. And think too, a little bit later, like when Chewie's about to choke him out, Leia was going to pretty much let him kill him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Leia had no problem with him strangling Lando right in front of her eyes. Like, she was going to let that happen.
Right. Yeah. No, and she can handle Vader. Vader's not an issue for her.
Yeah.
You know, she's dealt with him before. She'll deal with him again. But it's this guy who was, you know, kind and welcoming and, you know, supposed to be this old friend of Han's and was going to help them get, you know, back on the road. And then he just, you know, betrayed them in the worst way possible. And Han is suffering a whole lot for it. And so she's not having any of it.
No.
And this is when we really start to see her shift in where her care is directed. Because she's, up to this point, she's really been very much caring about her cause, the rebellion, the alliance, you know, all this greater thing. And now it's these people. It's these people close to her. You know, it's Han, and then Luke, when they find out Luke is coming in, you know, it's the people around her and this you know, little family that they've sort of built up. And this is when she really starts investing a lot of energy and time trying to protect them and to save them and to defend them. So, obviously, then we got the carbon freezing chamber scene coming up.
Right.
Where she initiates again.
Yes.
And says, I love you.
Han knows.
Yes, Han knows.
He's aware.
And it's interesting because we get a very immediate response, you know, emotional response from her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
you know, that
so,
we didn't.
Yeah,
so we didn't really see about Alderaan, you know. Which is interesting, and obviously, of course, Leia was in front of
Tarkin and Vader.
Tarkin and Vader, in that sense,
right?
And maybe she's in that moment of Han being frozen in carbonite. She's having flashbacks to Alderaan, and I've lost another one,
right?
You know,
yeah,
it's another one to add on my list of loss of my list the list of people I've lost. You know,
yeah.
So it's.
I love you.
Sorry.
So, but yeah, that's the thing. It's a really interesting moment there because she doesn't know if she's ever going to see him again. And obviously, you know, Lando thinks that Leia and Chewie are going to stay there, and there's no way Leia believes that that's going to happen. because right after that is when Vader says, you know, bring them to my ship. And of course, Leia probably saw that coming a mile away, but because of how savvy she is.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you want to say anything else about that scene before we moved on?
Yeah, I haven't really said anything.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I missed yakking.
I was letting you yak away. Yak face. No, I mean, I'll just mirror some of what you said, but yeah, right. She's the one who initiates this again. And it does. It's just this very instinctual response to the reality that she might lose him here. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's partly is just this is her heart just shouting out, I love you. And also, I think she really does want Han to know that. Like, in case there's any confusion, I do love you.
Right.
And, you know, and she, just like Chewie, too. I mean, this is a very great moment for Chewie, too. Like, how he's going nuts and roaring his head off. Leia is like just the sadness on her face. Because again, she's about to lose somebody she really, really loves and that she really cares about. And you can't help but wonder, like, this is clearly why she doesn't let herself get emotionally attached to people, because she doesn't want to lose them.
Right.
Right? Like, she's part of a huge cause that is very threatening. It's very risky. So to love someone is to bring them into that world, to bring them into that risk. So Leia almost, like, you know, understandably shields herself so as to not cause this sort of devastation. And I think she even feels a certain level of guilt for what she's done to Han. Because remember, I mean, she kind of is part of what roped him in.
Yeah. No, definitely. There's got to be a lot of guilt that she's carrying around, especially with Alderaan, and then now, of course, with Han. But it's one of those things where I'm really interested to see how the new canon addresses these issues. Because she's totally got to have a lot of guilt and you know, disappointment and sadness that she's carrying around with her, and to be able to present herself and to be this strong person in front of everybody else, it's got to take a toll on her somewhere.
Right.
But of course, did you want to say anything else before we get to them escaping and what she does with Luke? Or
Well, I think it's important to note after they, you know, there's that, I mean, that shot of her watching Slave One fly away.
Oh, yeah.
The look on her face of just utter sadness. And the way that her the love theme between her and Han swells there, too. And there's just the sadness that is all over her face.
There was hope. There was hope that they could
cut
Boba Fett off and they could get him back.
And that was just... And she's frozen in that moment for a second. If you think about it, because, like, 3PO yells, Chewie, they're behind you. And there's a few shots before Leia even comes to turn around, to return the fire. Like, she's frozen in her sadness for a moment there, which is, that says a lot about Leia. Leia would never have been like that in A New Hope.
No. Right?
Like, that is not the Leia, or even the beginning of this movie, that is not what we would have expected from Leia. She is frozen in her sadness while she's getting shot at. I mean, granted, it's very brief, which makes sense. You are getting shot at. But
yes.
But at the same time, like, she is frozen in her sadness. And Carrie Fisher just nails that, like, the look on her face.
That's a good point.
It's a great shot.
Yeah. But then, of course, that's a good point. Like I said, that there was hope. There was hope to get him back. They were this close, and it just flew away in front of them. And so now she's got to regroup. And as they're flying away from Cloud City, they're home free. She's at the controls. And then she senses something. And this is where, you know, Luke has called out to her, and she responds back and goes back to get Luke. They obviously know he's there because she had that whole, it's a trap. She said it first, not Akbar.
Yeah.
But she does that, like, she's in the middle of this, you know, convoy, basically, of Imperial troops that's taking them away. And she, you know, without any concern for herself, you know, tries to tell Luke, it's a trap, get out of here. And she's, you know, forcibly removed, obviously. But she's about ready to just run out there and like, grab him and take him away if she can get to him. But it's a trap. And that was, you know, an interesting moment there. But, yeah, the most interesting, obviously, is the fact that she's able to save Luke. And I think that sort of helps her, you know, mental emotional state after just losing Han. She's able to go and kind of rectify that to herself by saving Luke. And, you know, she takes him and to the back and starts, you know, patching him up and stuff like that. But it's very tender sort of way, which we haven't seen her even interact with Luke in that sort of a tender way before either. I mean, the last time, you know, Luke was in a medical room, she used Luke to spite Han. You know, I guess you don't know everything about women yet, and, you know.
Ain't that the truth.
But yeah, so it's a really interesting scene because we get to see the idea that she might be Force sensitive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We as the audience don't really know that she's Force sensitive, but that connection is made and we're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So it is one of those interesting things. Did you have anything you wanted to say about that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's right. It's the first time where we get the impression that she obviously must have the Force, right? Like, Luke reaches out to her, and although we don't necessarily know that she has it, right? Like, it's because again, like, when we see Luke hanging from the bottom of the weather vane, it's very similar to him hanging from the Wampa cave early in the movie. He closes his eyes, like he did in the Wampa Cave, to call the lightsaber, but now he's closing his eyes and calling out to Leia. So for all we know as the audience, it could just be the fact that Luke is using the Force to contact her.
Right.
But she's like, her ability to just, like, Luke. Like, I know where Luke is. And I like what you said too, Jason. Like, this is letting Leia be Leia, though, again. Same old Leia. She's feeling devastated for what just happened to Han, but now she can, you know, rather than having to sit in that sadness, she can go act and save at least Luke.
Right.
So, you know, it gives her some sense of power back, right? Like, she had no power. Right. She was completely powerless as Han is tortured, frozen in carbonite, and taken by Boba Fett. Now she has the ability to do something. She can take her power back a little bit.
Right.
I think that's really important for her as her character. And you're right, you know, and then we do see her being very tender with Luke. And, you know, she does give Luke a little kiss on the cheek, but I never, even like now, I never see that as like her being romantic with Luke. I think of her just as a caregiver. You know, because then, like, you know, as Luke comes into the cockpit, she's like very tender to him, like moving around him and stuff. And, you know, she very much cares about Han and Luke at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then we get to the beginning of Return of the Jedi, and she's completely off from the rebellion by choice. And she's doing this rescue mission. You know, she and Luke have decided that they're going to go and save Han. You know, obviously Lando and Chewie have already been, you know, sent to sort of infiltrate, but she's not really, you know, doing anything. I'm sort of jumping ahead a little bit here, because it's an interesting point. I wonder if Leia sort of stepped down from the high leadership position that she obviously held at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. Because it's Mon Mothma and Admiral Akbar and Krix Maydeen that are doing the briefing.
Right. Leia's not part of that.
And she's sitting with everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm wondering if she sort of stepped back and let other people, you know, step up. Because up to that point, you know, she was very hands-on, and this was her rebellion, and she was not going to let anything happen to it. And then, of course, she was taken away from it in Empire Strikes Back. But it's like she's like, okay, I can be a part of this and still, you know, be myself, you know, that sort of thing. So she's obviously very influential still, which makes me wonder if she really is going to be in a political role in episode 7. If she's stepped back, if she's not like that high, you know, up as she used to be, it'd be interesting to know what her role was in Return of the Jedi, because I don't think it's as important or as high up as she was in Empire.
Mm, so. That's a good point. Yeah. And if that is indeed the case, right? Cause we're never explicitly told that. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's a good point. Like, she's in no way leading the briefing. She is not one of the higher ups anymore. But I think, again, and going back to the point of just the beginning of the film where she's risking her own life, to walk away from the rebellion to go rescue her lover. You know, she is a markedly different person than she was in A New Hope. And again, like I was saying earlier, whereas in A New Hope, she's more devoted to these abstract ideas, these thoughts and this mission. She's now very clearly devoted to people. She's devoted to her friends, and to Han. And that's a lot. You know, she's much different of a person now. And especially if she, you know, steps down a bit from her higher up role, she's making a conscious decision to choose her friends and working with them as opposed to just leading the rebellion.
Right.
And I think she now sees, I think it makes her a better rebel because she's fleshed out why she's doing this.
Right.
You know, it's not just a great idea anymore. There's real people's lives at stake. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and part of the, you know, stuff like kind of going back to what we were talking about a little bit ago in Empire is there is a good chance that she is feeling a little bit guilty for what happened to Han. So mm-hmm. while there's certainly probably the main driving force to her going into Jabba's palace is love and wanting to rescue Han, there might be a small element of guilt too that she's the reason he's in this predicament, because at the beginning of Empire, he was going to leave to go pay off Jabba.
Right.
But she kind of gets him to stick around a bit inadvertently, and, you know, then things just spiral from there. So,
right.
You know, it says a lot about her as a person too, right? She feels like she owes this to him.
Yeah.
In a sense,
she's responsible
for
what has happened to him.
Right. He threw his lot in with us. He threw in his lot to come back to, you know, the main part of Echo Base while the battle was going on to make sure she got out okay.
Yeah.
Right. Like she's the reason he got held up.
You got your clearance. Why didn't you leave?
Yeah.
You know,
don't worry. I'll get you to my ship. But first we got to get you to your ship. You know,
right.
I mean, which, you know, Han is obviously caring about her before himself, which is new for Han. And, you know, but I think that's also attractive to Leia.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah. So,
but I mean, of course, you know, Leia does rectify the situation and she takes care of that Jabba business permanently.
Yes. Yes. And it's worth mentioning the fact that she kills Jabba. I mean, that's, she's kind of a badass. I mean, yeah, she chokes out Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
She's this kind of like skinny, small humanoid who kills a Hutt. You know?
Just strangles a Hutt to death.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's no easy feat. You know, because, you know, who knows where exactly the esophagus is in that, you know, fatty mass that is
right.
The neckish body thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I don't have a lot after the briefing. Because obviously she decides to go with Han's force.
Yeah.
Han and Luke, they're all going to go. The team's back together.
Exactly.
And she's very happy about that.
Yes. Yeah, to me, it's like she goes off with her family, her friends, to take the fight back onto the front lines, right? She wants to be on the front lines. And she's the reason. She's the glue that brought Luke and Han in anyway. So here's Han, like, volunteering for the rebellion to go do this thing. There's no way she's going to let him go on his own. And then Luke shows up too. So, I mean, again, it's the gang's back. And I think it's really cool because, you know, she could have stayed back and helped with the planning of it more. Or there's so many other things she could have done. But she chooses to go to the front lines because that's where her family's going. So
it's
a family event.
It is. It is.
Some families have game night. Some families have take down the shield generator night.
Right. Yeah. I just remember the shot where Madine is explaining what the ground force's job is going to be, and she sort of leans over to Han and, you know, I wonder who they got to pull off that, you know, and then he's, you know, Madine says, Captain Solo,
General is
your
strike Solo.
General Solo. Solo, is your strike team assembled? And the look that she gives him is like, you?
Yeah, exactly.
You volunteered to do this?
Yeah.
You just got back from being in Carbonite for, you know, 8 months or whatever it was.
Right.
You're going to do this?
Yep.
And so she's like, General, count me in. Mm-hmm. Also sort of like, I'm going to keep an eye on you, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Luke comes back and she's very happy to see him. And, you know, they share that little moment. And they've sort of settled into this brother-sister relationship even before knowing that they really are brother and sister.
Right. What is it? Luke. Ask me again sometime.
Ask me again sometime.
What a weird response.
Ask me again sometime.
I want to pull that on somebody at the con for sure. Somebody asks me a question, I'm going to be like, ask me again sometime.
Yes. Although Mark Hamill does have that little odd, you know, extra emphasis on the first part of ask me again sometime. And I'm sure that he's like, oh, that's the one take I wish they hadn't used, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't really have anything about her until her and Luke's conversation in the tree forest. Did you have anything else?
The only little thing I would mention, and I just thought of this, is she does, though, in the sense of her response to Wicket, is worth mentioning, right? She doesn't just like see him as some stupid little creature and just walk off on her own. She's willing to accept the help of a native. You know,
that's
very Qui-Gon and Jar Jar.
Yes.
You know, it's a character that we would assume is pretty useless, but like, you know, I love that. Like Leia helps him down off the log and starts walking one direction. He like pulls her hand and, you know, indicates, let's go this way. And she follows him. So I think that does say something about Leia's character. She, you know, she doesn't just brush the Ewoks aside. She sees value in them. And then when we see her, when they show up at the Ewok forest, she's dressed as one of them. Like she's
already been welcomed in.
Exactly. She's already been like enculturated into that society. And, I think she sees a benefit in that. So, I mean, that shows her openness to a bigger picture. So,
right.
But
which is very, really, really kind of neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, you know, right on the eve of this final battle, she gets a bombshell. Mm. Just a total bombshell. Great thing. Yay. Luke and I, we're brother and sister. That's wonderful. Oh, Vader's my dad? What?
Yeah.
You want to say that again? Although it all starts with the whole mother conversation. And this is where I was going to launch into my theory that she'd figured out, either Bale told her or she had figured out who her mother really was. Because, you know, there's always that question, well, how does she know who, you know, who Padme was? You know, she was just born and that sort of thing. And I was like, you know, Bale's got to have told her, you know, or she made Bale tell her. You told me that she had an image of a Padme in her room.
Yeah, so she doesn't have it. So when she shows up on Naboo, she sees a painting of Padme on the wall of Theed, and she like does a double take as if she like recognizes it. But that's it. So I'm sorry, I made it. Oh, okay. I oversold that.
Okay,
but there's like this recognition. It hasn't been fleshed out what that recognition is. Okay. They're still on Naboo in the comic, so we'll see what happens in the next one.
Oh, okay, cool. So. Cool. Well, but yeah, that's my theory, is that she has to know at least a little bit of her, you know, who her mother really is. Because let's be honest, she doesn't really look like Bail Organa at all.
Right.
Or Breha, his wife, who we saw briefly at the end of Revenge of the Sith. They're both, you know, slightly darker skinned and black hair, and she does not have either of that.
Right.
So she's got to know that she, you know, her mother is, you know, she's adopted. But then, of course, she gets the whole bombshell that Vader's her dad, and dad blew up my planet, and I've been fighting him basically my entire mature life, you know. When I matured and figured out what was going on in the galaxy, he's been the symbol of what I'm fighting against, and he's dad. That's a lot to handle.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, when Luke opens up about, you know, like my sister has it, she, you know, she confesses like somehow I've always known. Right. So, and I think she quickly accepts that, and that Luke is her brother. But notice she doesn't openly accept the fact that Vader's her father. She kind of just ignores that. She's not ready for that. She's not ready to hear that.
That's right, because, you know, Vader's like, my father.
You know,
your father? She says your.
She doesn't say our.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very clear that she's not willing to accept that right now. You know, I think that's important. I remember in the novel Truce at Bakura, which obviously now is just a legend. But there is, I'm pretty sure it's in that novel, there's a scene where Anakin appears to Leia and basically asks her forgiveness.
She sort of kind of gives it.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Like, it's very hard. It's still very, because that novel takes place like right after Return of the Jedi.
And there's another Legends book called Tatooine Ghost.
Right, yeah, where she learns more about Anakin's past.
Yeah,
yeah.
And she finally ultimately gets to the point where she can accept the fact that Anakin was her father.
Right.
And that's when she decides to name her third child Anakin. So, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, I never finished the novel. I started it once, but I never finished it. So, but anyway, yeah,
but you know, so in the Legends, we do know that it takes her quite a while to wrap her head around the idea that Vader's her dad. So, and I would think that would still be, you know, somewhat true, in the new continuity. That's a bit of a bombshell.
It is, yeah. And you know what's interesting too, though, is like Luke is basically saying to her, like, I'm going to go try and save him and bring him back to the good side. And Leia encourages him to run. She says, you know, then if he can feel your presence, then leave this place. Like, she's kind of encouraging him to just kind of disappear and then let them take care of it. Like, she, and part of me wonders, is she doesn't want Luke to succeed, I think. I think she sees Vader as a monster. Mm-hmm. And he's not my father. I had a father, you know, and he is our enemy. We will destroy him. Why don't you just go away and let us handle this, right? Like, she's trying to dissuade Luke from doing his redemptive work, you know? Ooh, kind of like in the Bible when Peter tries to convince Jesus not to go to the cross. He's like, dude, you don't want to do that. And he's like, Satan, get behind me. Hashtag Bible stories. But I mean, and Leia's not doing it intentionally, just like Peter wasn't either. Peter wasn't trying to be a bad influence on Jesus. But Leia doesn't want Luke. And this is my take on it. I could be completely wrong, but my take is Leia doesn't want Luke to succeed because she wants Vader to die.
Yeah, that's an interesting.
And that's it's a lot easier than forgiving him, right? Just he's the enemy. Let's just keep it that way. He's all in black. Yeah. It's black and white. Let's just kill him. Let's just make sure we defeat him.
Right.
And
it's really interesting. It's a really interesting take on that. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
And also, you know, this, you know, based on some of the rumors we've heard about episode 7 about Luke supposedly being off in exile, maybe Leia had something to do with that too, right? Because like here, we're in a tough spot and Leia encourages him to go, right? Go far away from here. I wish I could go with you. No, you don't. You've always been strong. But why must you confront him? Right? Like she doesn't want him to. She doesn't want Luke to succeed.
Because she thinks he's going to die. She doesn't think he's going to win. You know?
Yeah, that's probably the main thing.
She doesn't. She probably, you know,
Nor would she want him to, though, I really don't think.
I agree. That's probably a little bit there. But Vader is with the Emperor. The Emperor is there.
Yeah.
And she knows.
Right. They know that.
They know that. And so he's going to be on the Death Star, which means that even if he is able to do something about Vader, the rebels are probably going to blow him up, you know?
Yep.
So at least that's the plan.
Right. Yeah. We got all these teddy bears. We're going to make things explode tomorrow.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, they were all supposed to go and attack the shield generator together. And now Luke's not going to be there.
Yeah,
they were all gonna be, you know, doing this one last hurrah together, and they were gonna save the galaxy and bring freedom for the rebels, and that was the plan. That's the idea, and now Luke is throwing a huge wrench in that plan, and he's probably not coming back ever.
Right.
And of course, she's not supposed to tell. And you know, Han asks her, you know, to Luke, is that who you could tell? You know, and it's like she doesn't even know what to say because there's been so much
she that needs
she's
some time
had to take
it.
In.
Yeah, exactly. She needs some time to digest it.
Right.
And I do. I like that. I like that tender little moment. You know, Han's like, ah. And then he says, you know, I'm sorry. And she just throws herself into him and says, hold me. Because, and I think, again, that says a lot about her relationship with Han at this point. She trusts Han. She knows Han will care for her. And she gives, you know, and I actually really like that shot too, because Harrison Ford's a lot taller than her, which is very evident in that scene as well. You know, he's so big with his arms wrapped around her, and she's letting herself be comforted. That is not a Leia we saw in A New Hope or the beginning of Empire, right? She's letting herself be cared for.
Yeah.
And I like that. Like, I like that she allows Han to be that for her now.
Yeah. It's a nice little secure space there that she can start to try and digest and figure out all this information that she just got, you know, dumped with, you know. But then, of course, you know, at the end of it, you know, she's able to finally reveal to Han after the battle is done. And, you know, she, you know, does very well in the battle, even though she gets, you know, shot in the arm. But she's very helpful with the battle. She's the one that, you know, got them to have the idea of having the Ewoks help them. So that obviously helped carry the day. And at the end of it all, after the Death Star has been destroyed, she's able to have that moment with Han and finally lay everything out for him and say, look, Luke and I, we're actually brother and sister. You and I, we've got a future together. So she doesn't really say that in so many words, but we know that, you know, that kiss there said a lot more than than any words could.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, all I was going to say again is, at the end there, she does. She, like, lays out the truth, which to a certain degree, well, she doesn't say anything about Vader, but she does, you know, she's letting Han know that he is the one she chooses. Don't worry. I don't want to run off with Luke. You're the man for me. But Luke is my brother, right? So she's digested that truth, and now she's sharing it with Han.
Yeah.
So
Well, the other thing, real quick, I almost forgot this, is right after it blows up, you know, Han immediately turns to her and says, I'm sure Luke wasn't on the thing when it blew.
Good point.
And she goes, he wasn't. I can sense it. I can feel it.
I can feel it. Yeah.
And he's like, wait, what?
Excuse me? Yeah, no, that's a good point too, right? Like, there is that force connection between the two of them.
Yeah.
So
she's, it's interesting. The last thing we really, couple of things that we see from her is she's getting ready to, you know, really jump into this relationship thing with Han, and she's, you know, using the force there, which really makes me wonder what kind of Leia we're going to see in episode 7. Because obviously everybody's like, oh, well, she's going to be the politician, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I'm not entirely sure.
Right.
Because, like I said earlier, I'm suspecting she's not, you know, at this point, as high up in the Alliance as she used to be, you know, by choice.
Right.
And, of course, now there's this whole other side that she's Force-sensitive, and she could be a Jedi, and Luke was given the mandate to pass on what you have learned, and who's the... you know, the easiest person to do that with right now, Leia. So,
yeah.
It just makes you wonder what we're going to see in episode 7. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good point because I think she is of the big three that, you know, obviously all returning in episode 7. I think she's the biggest unknown.
Yeah. She's got so many different paths that she could take from that point.
Right. She could be the Jedi. She could be the Supreme Chancellor type role. She could be a military leader. She could be something we don't even know.
She could set up a refugee relief, you know, organization and just be flying across the galaxy, helping those, you know, in need sort of thing.
Right.
Which I wouldn't put that past her either. So it's a really, you're right. She's such an unknown, you know, moving forward from Return of the Jedi. For us, you know, what is she doing? And Luke has a pretty, I think, pretty clear track of where he's going to go. It has to do something with the Force, something with the Jedi, probably. And then Han's going to be, you know, having that life with Leia, most likely. But, you know, going to be rebel? Is he going to be, you know, just sort of doing odd jobs on the side sort of thing? But it's sort of the same type of path that he could do. And Leia's got a whole wide open field, and it's like, what are we going to see?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
But there.
There's our thoughts on Leia.
Yeah. She's a very strong and soft-spoken character.
Yes.
And Star Wars would not be Star Wars without her.
Exactly. Yeah, and I am really excited to see, you know, what her relationship with Han and Luke is when we get into episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And whether she's a Jedi or not. That's what I'm most curious about. So,
yeah, I agree.
So I think
that was a good conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that about wraps up our conversation.
Oh, man, that was so much fun.
Yes, it was.
I'm glad we decided to do this.
I am too. Good call, Jason.
Thank you. But before we wrap things up, we have a new matchup. And this was given to us by one of our Larians. He's one of our youngest Larians that I think we have. He's 12 years old, and his name is Adrian. And he emailed this matchup in a while back, but we'd had a couple of other things going on. And weren't able to get to it yet. But, Adrian, I told you we'd get to it, and here it is. And this is a matchup of Palpatine versus 100 clone troopers. And we did one like this really early on with Yoda and stormtroopers. Yoda and 100 stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Yoda won. But now we're going to do it the other way. You know, we're going to have Palpatine versus 100 clone troopers. And we want to know what you think and who's going to win that. And, Carl, where can they tell us their thoughts on this matchup?
Or anything else about the Wampas Lair?
Yes. Anything else about the Wampas Lair.
They can do so on Facebook, facebook.com/Wampas Lair Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Wampas Lair, or send us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. Our next episode will be all focused on Star Wars Celebration Anaheim.
Celebration 7,
as Carl likes to call it.
I will not call it Celebration Anaheim. I've never heard of Celebration Orlando or Celebration Indianapolis. Stop it.
But we've had Celebration Europe.
Well, that's because they do things different over there.
But we're going to be talking about what our plans are, what we're looking forward to, and then just some sort of general convention advice that we might have. So hopefully we'll be able to get that out before we take our break.
That's
the plan anyway.
Yes, so we'll get that out probably next week at some point. I'm going on a retreat during the week next week, so I will be out of town for a little bit. But when I get back, before we head down to Anaheim, we're definitely going to get this recorded and put out before people start their commutes.
Yes, yes. So, and we won't do our matchup or anything in that episode. That'll sort of just be a standalone special episode. But if you're, you know, I know a lot of you are really wondering what our plans are and what we're going to do. Well, we're going to have an entire episode devoted to that sort of thing. So keep looking out for that, especially if you're going to Celebration in Anaheim in just over 2 weeks from now, which is so exciting.
Yes, I know. It's crazy. Two weeks from today, I don't know what time it is there, but yeah, I'll basically be in Anaheim by this time in 2 weeks, which is crazy. I've never been to the West Coast, so I'm very excited too.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yes. And 2 weeks from tomorrow is when Kyle Baca and I will be driving from Tucson to Anaheim. It'll be wonderful. So be driving. Yes. I was actually doing steering in motion.
He was doing steering in motion. Yes.
But anything else that you want to bring up before we wrap up this episode?
I don't think so.
All right, well, this has been episode number 124 of the Wampus Lair podcast, Your Worshipfulness. Be sure to check us out along with all the other awesome Star Wars podcasts on Star Wars Report's Second Airborne Division of Podcast at starwarsreport.com. Please, if you have time, leave us a review or rating on iTunes or wherever you get our podcast. That would be most appreciated. But until next time, for Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you in the Wampus Lair.
Look, Your Worshipfulness, let's get one thing straight. I take orders from just one person, me.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Excuse me. There's a...